He put the labor movement in the middle, meaning with the moderates.
Yeah.
Well, the programs that Briscoe is considering now, that look like they'll be proposed this year, next year, is that going to result in a tax increase?
No, sir.
This is,
he said there won't be.
All right, so he's planning to do this out of the surplus.
And the two big items will be pay raises and the education public school.
Pay raises for state employees?
State employees and retired employees, retired teachers.
So basically then this is coming out of the inflated, in a sense, inflated revenues from oil and gas, because the price increase in the sales tax revenues result from inflation.
There'll be a big movement, but everybody more or less recognized the need to decentralize your MHMR and your youth care facilities. I think the fight is going to be over how much we can afford to do at one time. The governor recognizes that you're better off with community facilities, like everybody does. Some are going to want to do it quite a bit faster than others.
Does he have any state program insofar as housing is concerned?
Department of Community Affairs is working on something. I don't know what they're going to ultimately come up with. I've not seen their master plan.
What sort of public kindergarten program is taking?
We just started. Just started passing the last session. Now there's a movement afoot to put more money into it, particularly bilingual education. There you'll see some activity in the legislature there. The governor is developing a very, very strong migrant affairs office program.
Let me ask you this, Bob.
Is that in the governor's office?
Yeah.
VOQ wrote about Texas, you know, 25 years ago, something to the effect that there was a lot of new wealth in Texas and very newly rich people who had not developed any sense of social conscience, a social responsibility toward wealth. Is that changing? Is that what's reflected by the current leadership in the state level, where you have a fair number of millionaires in office? I mean, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. All these men are personally worth, you know, have personal fortunes in excess of $1 million. Does this represent a change in that, sort of a second generation of wealth?
I never really thought of it that way, and I don't know whether I'd want to generalize whether they're just... As I say, even having lived here since 69, I don't really feel that I have that much perspective on the state to know.
We're taking the historical perspective out of the question. Do you feel that this group that have come into office in the 1970s in these various state constitutional offices have a sense of social responsibility?
Well, I don't think there's any question.
Yeah. Is it your impression that this is a fairly recent development in Texas?
I just don't think I'm qualified to answer that question. Now, you know, if you talk to some of the old Connolly people, I suppose you'd consider Connolly fairly conservative, and yet he just did a fantastic job broadening higher education, broadening opportunities, and keeping down the tuition, which obviously has a great impact on everybody across the state. And so I think they probably say, well, he had a great social conscience. I just don't know how to answer it. Now, somebody who's been around here a lot longer than I have.
But the assertion is that in the 50s and the 60s, there were a group of men, big money men in this state, who picked the candidates for governor, for statewide office, ran the legislature, and still do. they pretty well determine who the nominees will be and what's going to be run under conservative big money Democrats. That's the assertion. And without that support or without that blessing, you won't win.
Well, it's quite obvious that to run a statewide off campaign in Texas, you've got to have heavy finance. You know, that's the Barefoot Sanders just couldn't get it. And if he'd gotten it, I think he might have been in the beat tower. So in that sense, you're probably right. I would say it's more of a negative influence than a positive influence. I'm not sure they can, the big money people, can pick or choose their candidates now. But I think they could probably kill a candidate by refusing to finance them. You follow me? I don't think they're kingmakers as much as they are necessary ingredients to a successful race. I just, I was in Washington at the time that my wife was handling Barefoot's Travis County campaign, and I did what I could for him up there and developing issues for him and things, and the poor guy is just trying to cover the state campaign. He's just unbelievable. As I said earlier, you don't have a state television network. There's no one place you can go on, have a news conference, and have every station just pick it up instantly. You really got to depend on the people there to send their reporters in, which they ordinarily won't do. Or you've got to get in your goddamn airplane and fly out there. Get on a local station. He's on the move constantly. In New England, if you get on a television station, you pretty well cover the state. Here, it's just unreal, huh?
The whole region.
Yeah. Here, it's just unreal. So you've got to be well-financed to make the race, and that's why I presume that took Yarborough so long. You get the name identification, the organization you needed, and the public support.
Did any of these new campaign limitation proposals recommend limitation of individuals' personal contribution, a candidate's personal contribution?
Yeah, I think there probably will be something like that. I don't know what form it'll be.
Couldn't, in Texas at least, couldn't that have the effect of increasing the influence of big money?
Might. But if you limited what they could give, might offset that. I have a feeling, getting back to the point I was making earlier about the new breed of voters in Texas, I have a feeling that Fred Hoffmeister might be the guy capture that. He's young, he's a new face, he's a good aggressive campaigner. I think he'd like to run for the Senate.
Was he mayor of Houston?
Houston. But if it takes somebody like that, I think it's got to be somebody who'll be young, attractive, good television personality.
Basically, sort of moderately progressive?
Yeah, although I think, depending on the circumstances, a conservative might be able to do it. But I think people probably would consider them moderates.
Well, Benson basically ran as a conservative, didn't he?
He ran as a conservative against Yarborough.
Yeah.
And then he moderated like hell against Bush. But I think basically he surprised a lot of people by a lot of his votes.
How much polling does Governor Briscoe do?
We ran a poll in the primary, ran a poll in the general election, that was it.
Does he do any polling other than campaign polling? None on just issues and this sort of thing.
You intend to?
No plans at the moment. Yeah, you know, after you've just come out of a campaign, you don't need much of a poll. You pretty well figure what people are talking about. Questions they throw at you, questions reporters throw at you in any given area you go into. I think he's feel he has a pretty good grasp of what the issues are in the state. People don't want to do taxes, people are concerned about inflation. I don't view these times in Texas as an issue-oriented time. Labor issues, human issues. Even the education thing really hasn't stirred anybody up too much. The paper that editorialized about it, we get very few letters on.
You see it then more as issues revolving around management. Management of problems.
Yeah. Wanting as little interference from government as possible. This will change overnight. Unemployment starts going up. It's Texas. Hasn't been hit too hard by the recession yet. Get the unemployment figures start going up. That'll change all the fast.
How do you assess the Republican Party in Texas? Sort of two views. One is that it's negligible and not getting any better. And the other is that under the circumstances, they really didn't do badly this year, even though they did poorly in the statewide races, that they picked up those two county judge seats and really didn't suffer any real, much in the way of real loss. A seat here.
Maybe
seat
I can
there.
Answer that best by telling the story. We had this guy, Nick Rowe, who's a POW. Running against Bullet Patrol, and he mounted the best financed, the best organized, the most intensive campaign. He had another guy who was running against Mack Wallace, the Railroad Commission, whose name I don't even remember. He didn't do anything. I think he spent about $14,000 or something, and he got as many votes as Rowe did. So that indicates to me that the Republican Party just isn't going anywhere. There just were a certain amount of votes there for Republicans, and they just weren't going to get any more of them.
So
but again, you know, on the national level, that's something else again. But as an organized party, I don't personally see any great movement. But of course, then you've got this other problem that organized parties generally are becoming less effective, have less strength. So given those circumstances, because I'm pessimistic about parties anyway, and I wish I didn't have to be because I believe in them. Just look at any of the polls, fewer and fewer people are identifying themselves with parties. And at a time when that's happening, you can't expect the Republicans. They're definitely a minority party in the state anyway, really, I think, developing a big strength as a organized party.
Do you expect, if Benson remains a serious contender for the presidential nomination, is he going to also simultaneously run for re-election in the Senate?
I presume he will if he can.
I mean, if he can legally? Or?
Yeah.
There's nothing to prevent him from doing so now. Is it?
It's my understanding that somebody changes the law. I don't know. Nobody's told me he would, but I just assume he would. Unless there were huge outcries. He felt he just couldn't live with it.
Did Governor Riscoe develop his own campaign organization in 72 and 74? Did he rely on the party apparatus?
Well, first ran in 68. I think he finished third. really isn't much of a party apparatus. Small SDEC, State Democratic Executive Committee office. You've got to put together your own in Texas. You've got to get your own local coordinators, area coordinators, county coordinators.
Did his organization overlap with anybody else's? Were the same people in several?
Oh, I'm sure there were in some cases. I don't know any great specific examples. I wasn't that involved in the organization aspect of it. But I would say in most instances they were his people he'd known. And it was an amateur operation. So I would think that in most cases there was no overlap, because there were people who never in 72 who had very little experience in politics. They were amateurs, believed in him, wanted to see him governor, and they worked at it. Some of them became very effective, some of them didn't. So basically he put together his own organization.
How do you get along? How does this office get along with Towers?
No great problems. O'Brien, no problems particularly. We've got an excellent office, State Federal Relations in Washington. Tower heads it, and he works with the Texas delegation up there. Now, we don't work closely with Tower, but we don't have any good run-ins.
Is the reported figure on the amount of money that Briscoe spent in 74, is that right?
You know, the reporting laws are so complicated. If you want an answer to that, call David Dean. What's left of the campaign headquarters. And he can give you a full breakdown, because it's the way you have to report it under the law, that sometimes money he lends the campaign looks like it's lumped in with something else, and the figure is exaggerated, but by how much, I don't know. He's on 476-4806, and he can give you a complete breakdown of exactly how much he spent, how much was spent. He's done nothing but
Is it likely that he'll be the last governor that will be able to spend that much of his own personal wealth in a statewide campaign?
I wouldn't be surprised. I imagine this is a restriction. Now, of course, he wouldn't have had to spend all that if he hadn't voluntarily frozen his funds for his October dinner last year, consisting of a suit. There's over $400,000 in there. Was raised at dinner after expenses were taken out. As soon as she filed suit, he just froze it. That money, presumably, I guess, eventually would be paid back in the campaign treasury, paid back to him. So from that point of view, it would probably be I have a feeling, I don't know what sort of feelings you all have having gone all over the South. I'm quite sure about the Republican Party. George Chris and I were just talking about this last week. You know, I think when Nixon tried to put together his new majority, I think he did a horrible thing in the South. And I really believe he appealed to the base instinct of the Southerners. I think it was after the Wallace move of the people. And I think that's why it really failed to coalesce the Republican Party. because I just don't think you can maybe win an election on a race issue or a veiled race issue, something like that. But I don't think you can, put together a permanent operation. Do you have that feeling at all? You know, when Roosevelt put together his coalition, he was appealing really to people's legitimate desire, wanting economic development, wanting to get the hell out of the Depression, wanting to give them an opportunity. And that they responded to that on a long range basis, responded up to the time the race issue hit. But I don't think he appealed to any tangible, long-range emotion that people are proud to hold on to. People don't want to wake up in the morning and think they're racist. They may be racist in one sense, they may be very decent, progressive people in another sense.
I think what he tried to do is sort of make it respectable.
You can't do that. Do it as long as you've got busing and a few issues like that. We might have been able to succeed.
What do you think he would have had to have done to succeed?
Get them behind him on a respectable conservative program. The South is conservative. You know, build something positive. Which he did in some cases, and then I think destroyed it. Christian said he really honestly believed that he was putting together a whole new ball game in American politics. The Rising Above Party. I think the way he did it was a very fragile thing.
It seemed to be pretty much gone.
Anybody else in the executive office we ought to talk to?
You might want to talk to Ken Clark. He's going to have some meetings in just a few minutes. I won't try to get him later on today. He was the campaign manager. He has both resigned from the campaign office, and he can tell you a lot more about the organization.
End interview. It's Bob Hardesty. No more transcription. This tape.